I'm Amy, sex educator, sex and relationship coach, and co-owner of PurePleasureShop.com.
And I'm April, sex toy maven, VP of Hot Octopus, and I've dedicated my life to the business of sex. We're two people with a passion for educating and inspiring shame-free conversations about sex and relationships.
Welcome to the Shameless Sex Revolution. Want to learn more? Go to shamelesssex.com. And for 15% off of some of our favorite sex toys, use coupon code SHAMELESSSEX at purepleasureshop.com.
You are listening to a pleasure podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Well, hello, everyone.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome back to the Shameless Sex Podcast. This episode is with Gigi Engel. I'm so stoked that we have her on our show. I have been a fangirl. So many fangirl moments lately.
I learned nearly 15 new facts on the show. And I'm guessing off the top of my head, it could have been more. I've actually referred to this interview, because we recorded it a couple weeks ago, in the outside world. I've referred to it to a couple of people that I've talked to about various things. And I love the topic because how much did you learn from this?
So much. And I have actually gotten arguments with people about sex and porn addiction because the ideas around it are, they differ. Everyone has differing opinions. And I think, I mean, when it comes to addiction, it's a heavy topic. And so I know a lot of people that are in the like, oh no, it's a definitely a real thing. It's a problem. Porn is all bad. And then there's people like, no, it's actually not an addiction. So
I just she was talking about this. She's like,
she wanted to separate.
And you also throw the word addiction onto anything. It's a very heated word, and it has a lot of context.
Well, her ultimate goal is to free people from shame. And so it seems like her approach is very much, if we have a label like addiction or something else and it creates more shame, then that's problematic, because it's just shame that got them there in the first place, shame and trauma. So why are we going about it in a way that's just creating more of that? So stay tuned if you're someone who felt like you have had a sex addiction or a porn addiction, or maybe you have one, or you've been in a relationship with someone, or maybe you know someone, or in the future you might be in a relationship with someone who has these questions.
You're a human on planet Earth that digs information. That's smart information.
Yeah.
I'm an information. I know that I don't have porn addiction or sex addiction. And now that I know it's not a thing, I just like information, and I don't want to seem like an idiot if I'm talking to people either. Yeah. So
idiocracy.
You know what? Just be cool, man.
I also have my first cold since 2019. So I'm going to blame April's brain fart on my own brain. It's contagious.
Yeah, it might be contagious.
So stay tuned. Really awesome episode. And we will have Gigi back because she's fucking badass and she can speak to it on anything with brilliancy. So is brilliancy a word?
Yes, it is.
Okay, cool. All right. So LA, we're coming for you in January 12th and 13th. And it may be before that. We actually don't know about other events, but we know we will be at the Vibe Expo in LA. This is 2024.
It's at the Lowe's Hollywood.
Yeah.
So check it out. And
it's
free. There's a bunch of other vendors there, and it's a consumer show. There's workshops.
Consumer means sex toys. It's mostly like sex toys and adult products.
Right. But you don't have to be a person that's selling sex toys, but there are people that are offering workshops. Sexperts are there.
Oh yeah.
There are.
Have you seen the list, by the way?
Yeah. It's incredible.
Like Taomi is going to be there. We get to meet her in person finally. She's in our like still number two episode, How to Suck Dick Like a Boss. She's going to be there, but also we're going to be there.
We're going to be there. We're signing books. We're teaching a workshop. We are also, I think we're doing a live podcast. Yeah, I don't think I know we are.
On Friday, January 12th, we're doing a live podcast recording there. And then on Saturday, January 13th, we're teaching an oral sex 101 class. And if you just go to Vibe
Oral
Show,
Sex for All. For
Oral
everyone.
Sex for All, sorry. If you go to vibeshow.com, you sign up. Again, it is free. Come hang out with us, learn. You'll meet so many awesome sex educators. You'll see some cool toys. It's a fun time. There's a lot of energy in there. We haven't been since Brooklyn.
This is a new show. It used to be called the Sex Expo, but that was in Brooklyn. This is a new show for LA because post-pandemic, it's been a bit difficult. But this show, it's in a fabulous hotel, great location in Hollywood. We're going to be there. Excellent I think
Dirty Lola is going to be there too.
Look at vibexpo.com
Dr. Lori Bisbee. Oh, so many people have been on our shows. We've hung out with Lola many times, but yeah, people we've met in person. So yeah, go check it out. And so we will be there, like April said, with the various things we're doing. We will bring copies of our book, but if you already bought one, okay, first of all, if you haven't bought one, please buy a copy of our book. We would love for you to
also
buy a copy of our book.
Also, review our book. Yes. We're going to start talking about how important reviews are, not right now, but in general, I'll just highlight why reviews are important, because it helps people find the book, the item that you're reviewing. And obviously, 5 stars are appreciated. We spent so much time.
We spent 2 years of our life.
2 years of our lives. And if you dig our podcast and you like us in general, and hopefully you like the book, just rate us. You don't have to leave even a paragraph. You can leave a sentence. You can leave a couple of words. I think you might be required to leave a few words.
Yeah.
But anywhere books are sold, so Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local bookshop.org has it, mm-hmm. your local bookshop.
And if your local bookshop doesn't have it, go ask them for it. They can order it for you.
That's also on Audible.
Buy our book, review our book, and if you're in LA, bring a copy of your book, and we will sign your book. And we'll probably give you a hug. Ask first, but we'll give
you a 5-star review for showing up.
And if you don't have the book, then we'll be selling copies there as well. So come and visit us in LA, and if you're not able to come to LA, we will probably be in New York, Philadelphia, Austin, Texas, Miami, Chicago, kinds of places.
We'll have an event section on our website. Yes. We're going to set it up. So our website's actually more up to date than it's been in a while, because Amy and I don't have a team. We have Paige.
Executive assistant.
We don't have a huge team.
We're small.
So we shout out to our publicist, and we love her, and we need to ask her if we can say her name, but our agency that we use is awesome, and that's our only team, but really, it's just Amy and I, and thank you to Paige. But we are putting on another retreat, which is live on our website now in April of 2024.
April 24th to 29th, we will be in Tulum, Mexico. And this is our second retreat. We just did our first retreat in Costa Rica for women.
And we have a return. We already have someone that's going to
come back. I know. That's awesome.
And there are 70 people on the wait list. And I know it's around the holidays, but I will say.
Oh, this podcast. I was like, the retreat,
70 people on the wait list. We've sent out a notification to all those folks. It is around the holidays. So if you feel like gifting someone you love, because we had, I think, three people in the last retreat that were gifted this by their partners.
Yeah, that's
and
awesome.
They loved it. We have a WhatsApp group now where it's still active. And
yeah, we're also very connected.
Shout out to it. It was so beautiful. And so we're looking forward to this Tulum retreat. It's at another villa, all inclusive, meaning it's not going to be something where you have to forage for your own food every day.
Yeah.
We have a chef. We have live
yoga,
S Factor. It's so much fun. Just we don't even have to oversell it, because no doubt it's going to sell it. It's going to sell out as it did last time.
So go check it out on our website, shamelessx.com. There's a whole cute little video in there so you can see.
And all you have to do is put your deposit down to secure your spot.
And I wish it's April now. But you're April.
I am April.
I know. Oh, lucky. I want to be April.
I know.
All right. So go check it out. Okay. And like April said, a good gift item, because it's the gift giving season. Ready for a sex question?
I'm ready.
I have recently turned 50, but feeling and looking 35. I'm having lots of fun with mainly 28 to 35 year old guys. I think this is by a woman, by the way, which is super fun. A woman wrote this.
Okay.
A cis woman, I believe, wrote this. So she's 50, but feeling 35. I've been having a lot of fun with mainly 28 to 35 year old guys, which is super fun. However, I have PTSD from the end of my marriage with forced blowjobs. I really want to try again, but I'm super anxious about my technique, especially with these hot young guys. Do you have any videos I can watch or great tips?
Absolutely.
You had forced blowjob experiences with some of your first blowjobs, right?
Only one that was enough, and that was when I was 14.
Yeah, that's super traumatic, though.
It was super traumatic, and then I refused to give oral pleasure. I just refused. I was like, I'm not doing
years,
it. It was
right?
traumatic until my husband, until yeah. I got married.
So that was like your early 30s?
That was, no, I got 20s? Married at 28.
Okay.
So it was a long
time. It's
like
time. 2 decades of no dick sucking.
Almost. Because I was traumatized, and I felt like it. Every time I tried to suck dick, it just brought me back to this feeling of powerlessness.
Yeah.
And I was triggered. And as she was saying, the PTSD, it was, I didn't think it was that at the time. I don't like to over label myself with like trauma terms because I didn't feel like I was worthy of those terms.
I mean, at 14, you probably didn't even know what that was.
No, but too. I'm saying in my 20s, I wasn't like, I have PTSD for this. I would just tell people, look, blowjobs are really personal for me, and I'm only doing that, I actually would say, for my husband.
Oh.
And I dated someone for 7 years, yeah, and I didn't ever give him a blowjob.
Yeah. Yeah. And so did they know that you had trauma with that person?
Yes. I mentioned, I didn't ever go into detail.
But you said I had a bad experience before.
I just said I had a bad experience, and it's something that I'm not comfortable with doing. Yeah. And so I had plenty of oral experiences with dudes going down on me and I did lick box.
Yeah, girl, you licked that box.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I did.
She licked that box real good. Because that's safer, though, because you didn't have a traumatic experience from that.
Right.
That makes sense. And so for this person coming out of a marriage, you're having a great time right now with these 20 to 35 year old guys. You came out of a marriage with forced blowjobs. And so, of course, that is traumatic, and it will bring up I hear that you're nervous about your technique, but I'm also curious what also comes up with what you experience, April, this like going back into this history that's not really positive, bringing back these negative feelings. I don't really teach blowjob classes these days in person, but I used to teach blowjob classes. And I had one woman there who was in her 40s who had, I think she maybe started having sex later in life, like in her 20s. And so like sucking cock was never a big part of her life. Obviously it wasn't. She had never sucked a cock. She was in her 40s.
Okay.
And she had gone so long. So didn't have a traumatic experience, but gone so long without doing it that now she was just nervous to do it because she was worried about her technique.
Right.
And I know these are different things because this person's coming out of trauma. It's similar in that there's this fear of how am I going to be when I perform? Am I going to be good at it? But for this person, I just want to say also, once you actually put your mouth on a cock, you might have an experience like April did, where it brings, or not did, but you were afraid of, it might bring back these old feelings of I don't like this.
The only thing that really healed and helped that was the feeling of safety with a partner, someone that I trusted after I did
not
going to
push your head down.
Who wouldn't push my head, who also was patient. And I will say that there have been times where, because I took your blowjob classes in my 20s when you were teaching, and when also
like Midori taught them,
I did
Megan Andalou, so many educators,
and I watched videos, and then when I finally felt comfortable enough, I would practice, and there were lots of errors, and sometimes
there always is.
I do have a small mouth, a bad gag reflex, and I have large teeth, so I had to learn really a lot from trying to maneuver. And their patience is key, and having a person that you completely can feel vulnerable with and make mistakes with. So if you're banging out, you're having lots of fun with 28 and 35 year olds, which is super fun. If you find a person that you feel comfortable enough with explaining what your past experience was like and that you could just go slow. I still don't usually give blowjobs to orgasm. Mm. It's usually like a preparatory device, and I love it.
Oh my God, I remember when you had jizz in your mouth for the first time. That was like only a couple of years ago.
Only a couple
That's
years
so
ago.
So cute.
So adorable.
I like that. And well, it's your body and your choice. And so, so with these partners that you have, like April said, if you can share a little bit like, hey, I had a traumatic experience with oral sex, or I've had traumatic experiences, and I'm curious to know what you like. Maybe you can guide me, but I need you to not push my head down or face fuck me. Like, I need to be in full power, but I would love to hear, feedback, so with pressure, like faster, slower, softer, more lube, more on the head, more on the shaft, but making sure that they know that they can't push your body beyond what your body is into, because if you have that happen again, then there's more work to do once again.
I will recommend to you, just as an addition to what Amy was saying, cause yes, to all of what you said, it has been helpful to get feedback. I also like to give the disclaimers beforehand, and
like outside the bedroom.
And sometimes inside I'm like, whoa. Like that's a lot. Hey, can we go slower? Or usually going slower, or can I take a breather? And I'm just like,
If you were to say I had a past traumatic experience, would you
that's outside the bedroom. Okay, yeah. Okay. Not inside. But what's helped me, and I don't know if this is good advice or not, but for me, it has really helped. I'll also use a sex toy to just give me stimulation while I'm doing the blowjob, because then it's not so much. Sometimes it feels like pressure.
Like spotlight almost.
Yeah. And like me getting turned on makes me, I feel like, more into the dick sucking. So totally. That's my advice. I don't know if,
well, you
wanna
be,
feel the same.
You want to be into it. If you're not into it, I say don't do that, because then that's either compliant sex or tolerating sex. So whatever it helps you to be interested in. It sounds like this person wants to do it, but do it because you want to do it. If you want to learn more about, if it's regarding the technique, so we talked a little bit about like creating safety with partners. And also, if you don't feel safe with a partner, I wouldn't say that that's the one to explore this with, considering you have past trauma. Only the people that you feel like are really going to respect your boundaries. And then if you want to learn more, Samaya, who has the website, thesexualessentials.com, who also now has a podcast, by the way, that's doing really well. I think it's called Not Another Sex Podcast.
Well, I don't remember the name, but I think it's something like that.
Yeah,
you're probably right. Okay.
Yeah. So she's in our book, and she's awesome. She's been on a show many times. She has a master mouth class on her website.
She was the one that's like getting your nuts.
Yeah,
she talks about getting her nut.
Yeah. Like finding pleasure in whatever she does, right. even if she's sucking that dick.
Yeah.
So if you want to take a class, go take Samaya's master mouth class. Again, that's at thesexualessentials.com. She's fucking amazing.
And then we talked about you in the beginning of the show when we talked about the Vibe show. The Vibe Expo in LA, there is Taomi.
Yeah.
She does dick riding, and
I don't know if she does sucking though. Okay. She's like more oral.
Okay.
A lot of sex educators do. Like,
I know Ashley Manta
has the hand job stuff, so okay. But I don't know if she has blow jobs. I have on Pure Pleasure's website, purepleasureshop.com, I have the class called An Orgasmic Bliss Penis Pleasure 101 class. That's about everything from mouths to hands to all kinds of things related to pleasuring someone with a penis. But a lot of awesome sex educators will have something that of that form. I just know Samaya has one, and Samaya's
fucking
awesome.
Did we do a deep throating one with some with? Oh wait, we had the person that was fuck.
I know who you're talking about, Hedusa.
Yes,
yeah, Hedusa. Okay. She has an ebook.
Okay, yeah. That's another one. Okay, Hedusa.
Yeah, she has an ebook. So I don't know. It spells like Head USA because I was like, is it Head USA or Hedusa? I know she has an ebook, but so ebooks are great. I think we're also, she might have a video too, but I think we're visual people, and so the visuals can really help. So go check those out. Learn more. We have plenty of podcasts on it. If you go on our website and the search engine kind of sucks, but try to search over and over again.
What
if you look
you
up blowjob,
or
yeah, things will pop up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or oral, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
A blowjob will pop up. Why does it? Yeah.
We need to talk to Squarespace.
Squarespace. Okay. But that's a good starting point.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of resources. And
we talk a lot about in our book about how to conquer the cock, too.
We do. We took a lot of expert advice.
Yeah.
And so that's, and a lot of it is in the hands. So Ashley Manta's advice on hand sex can be incorporated into
that. Honestly, to me, a lot of what you do with your hands, your mouth just does the same thing. It's just like a juicier, wet space that has teeth that you need to be careful about.
Right.
And don't let anyone fuck that face unless you say fuck that face.
Well, get our book and then you can be guided through all of the techniques and
just suck
also,
all the dicks.
And all of the other experts out there. Okay,
dick.
Are you ready for a bio?
Yeah, dick.
All right.
Let's do it.
Gigi Engel is a London-based certified sex and relationships psychotherapist, sex educator, and author of All the Fucking Mistakes. Her work regularly appears in many publications, including Cosmo, Glamour, Men's Health, and Refinery 29. In 2019, she was named Journalist of the Year at the Sexual Freedom Awards, and in 2023, she was nominated for the XBiz Sexpert of the Year Award. To learn more, go to MissGigiEngel.com.
All right, everyone, it is interview time, and we are here today with Gigi Engel, and I'm super excited about this. I know I say that for every episode, and I feel like, I don't know, we keep like stepping up with these like dream guests.
Because we have amazing guests. That's why you can say it.
I know. There's all these amazing guests that we keep having, and it's like, really, we get to have that guest, and that guest, and that guest? This is amazing. So Gigi Engel is here. We're talking about porn and sex addiction. Is it real? What do you do with it if it is? What if it's not? What do you do with that? So you already heard a little bit about Gigi in the bio, in the intro. But Gigi, welcome to our show. And let's just open it up with, can you please tell our listeners how you got to where you are today in the field of sexuality?
Sure, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, longtime listener to Shameless Sex. I'm Gigi Engel. I'm a psychosexual and relationship therapist based in London. And I got to where I am today in a sort of strange manner. So I started out about a decade ago at a very small, at the time, millennial company. You might all know it today, Elite Daily. Shout out. And I was kind of writing all about sex. And something that I realized pretty early on was that there just like wasn't a lot of journalism that was sort of really well researched or like had experts that were a part of it. It was more like, you know, like 10 different ways to make your pussy taste different. And I was kind of like, like it'd be kind of cool to do some like feature journalism around sex. So I started doing that, really took off. It was really awesome. And then in 2017, I decided to go freelance. So I started writing for all these magazines, specifically at the time it was Teen Vogue. And I wrote an article that my editor suggested that was about anal sex. And it was like very basic, kind of like how to do it safely, how it works, kind of just like, you know, basic stuff. And this is for Teen Vogue. Let's keep that in our context peripheral. And I thought nothing of it because I have written some controversial shit. Like I had written, you know, how to masturbate and all this kind of stuff. So I didn't really think anything of it. And it kind of turned into a shit show. It turned into sort of this mass trolling media nightmare that was actually good for me because it ended up launching my career, really. And I was called a sodomite on Fox News. I wasn't aware we were still using the term sodomite in the year of our Lord 2017, but it is what it is. And there was a public book burning of the Teen Vogue magazine. Yeah, by this now banned from YouTube, white supremacist. So, and he banned, like she burned all these books, all these magazines of Teen Vogue. And I just remember the only thing I thought to myself was, oh my God, she thought I was in print. I was like so flattered. And that ended up getting me a book deal, which was awesome. And I wrote my first book, which is behind me here, which is called All the Fucking Mistakes. And it was kind of like a guide to sex, love, and life, kind of based on my experiences. It was very like agony aunts, kind of like, this is how you do kink. This is how you, what you should, how you avoid STIs. This is what you do with sex toys. And it was like a really great experience for me. And my freelance career took off after that. But based on the Teen Vogue backlash, I realized that what I really needed to do was get certified in sex education. Because even though I was an investigative journalist, I realized that sexuality is so nuanced and it's such a sensitive topic that sort of, which actually links very much into our theme for today, honestly, because of the nuance and the incorrect messaging that people have around it, I kind of realized I needed to be better for my readers. So I went back to school, I got certified in sex education. And then a few years later, I moved to London and I was like, what do I do now? And decided to pursue a career in sex therapy. So I went back to school again, did my post-grad work, and now I'm a psychosexual therapist. And here we are today.
I love this story. And I did not expect the book burning thing.
I know.
And sometimes what they say, right? There's people that say, and I say it sometimes, any press can be good press, mm-hmm. even when
it's bad press.
I do too. So not only are you a brilliant person and so genius, and I love that you're an investigative journalist and you still are, especially that you focus a lot of your attention on sex, which is so needed, but you're also a bang twin with me, meaning she has fringe in England, but bangs. So if you're not watching us on YouTube, y'all check out Gigi, because I think she might win the bang award or fringe award, as they would say. They don't know what
bangs. More banging.
Fringe. It's called fringe.
More
right?
Fringing.
So I just want to say I have respect for anyone that can rock a fringe and that can rock the fuck out of being a genius writer, because it's not easy. So thank you. So we're talking about porn and sex addiction today. Mm-hmm. So can we talk about what are the pros and cons of watching porn, and how can porn enhance my sex life? I know that it does. And how is it harmful? So there's kind of a three-tiered question here.
Okay. So yeah, it's a big topic. Basically, porn can be really beneficial for relationships. So we'll start with the positive stuff. So it can really improve like your ability to fantasize and be able to bring that into your relationship with your partner. And it can actually spike libido because it gets the sexual arousal process started. It can be something new, which a lot of couples in long-term relationships especially need novelty and excitement in order to keep their hormone levels like high to have desire. So it can be really helpful for that. But a really important caveat to that is that it's really dependent on how both partners feel about porn. if the partners understand that porn isn't a source of erotic material, that it's something that can be used as a sexual enhancement, and it's not something to be feared or something that would be considered cheating per se, then they really can benefit from it. And that kind of brings us into the whole is porn harmful thing. And I just want to qualify before I get into like how it can harm your sex life, because it really can't, because unless you feel shame around it. Unless porn is inhibiting your everyday function in life, if you're staying in your room for like 24 hours a day or like 20 hours a day watching porn, and you're not going to work and you're not seeing your friends and you're not going to social engagements because you're watching porn all the time, yeah, you might want to reevaluate your relationship with porn. But the vast majority of people have seen all of this media propaganda that's very anti-porn, which is very based in these religious organizations like Your Brain on Porn and others that are very based in religion, even though they try to market themselves as not being religious because they want to be palatable. And they think that there is this whole generation that's being destroyed by porn. So they have all of this media messaging coming in. And then on top of that, there is all this like shame around sexuality in general and around porn itself too. So if you have those feelings around porn and that's how you view it, it can be very difficult to bridge the gap in order to have it be beneficial for your relationship. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of the people who have identified themselves as porn addicts, the research has shown that the vast majority of people who are much more likely to identify with that term either consider themselves to be socially and morally conservative and or have a religious background or are religious. And that's what the data shows us. Mm-hmm. Porn is actually neutral. And the data has proven this. It's not going to harm your sex life. It's not going to hinder your sex life. And you can watch it. It's not going to harm you. You cannot watch it. That's not going to harm you either. And the real issue is media literacy and understanding that porn is entertainment and being able to understand the role of shame within our sexual selves. And that's the real foundational issue, not the porn itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have so many questions.
Mic drop.
Yeah. So podcast over. So many questions. And one I will start with. And so we just talked about how porn can enhance your sex life, and you were already talking about about a little bit of porn addiction. So how do you define porn or sex addiction? And maybe you don't agree with it because other people are saying that, and maybe you disagree that it's an addiction. So my next question with that, like on the side of that is porn and sex addiction real?
So there is absolutely no substantial evidence to conclude that porn or sex can be addictive. You cannot be addicted. A lot of these religious organizations use the word dopamine to make it sound scientific, like, oh, the dopamine rush, or you're going to be addicted to your dopamine. But actually, there's no possible way that you can be addicted to your brain chemicals. It's the same ideology that you'll hear with food addiction. You can't be addicted to food either. It's not the same thing. What it can happen is that you can become, it can be a compulsive behavior in the sense that you use porn to soothe an underlying stressor. So it could be life, could be stress, could be parents, it could be a whole host of things. So we are experiencing this very stressful, uncomfortable emotional state. And you may use porn, food, yoga even, to soothe that distress rather than actually coping with the underlying stressor in order to soothe that, fix that. Therefore, the other thing becomes less of a crutch. And research, as I had said, has shown that porn is actually quite neutral. It doesn't harm. It doesn't really make you better. It's very much a neutral thing. And I think that what's really important is that we're thinking more critically about the media that we're consuming. And this doesn't just include porn. It's basically everything that we see on social media, everything we get from the media, is to think about the ways that we are viewing things. And I think being able to critically look at those things, how is this impacting my life? Is what I'm seeing entertainment? Is what I'm seeing something that might be a hyper-realized version of life? When we talk about porn specifically, you might see something like, you know, Big Black Cock or like Ebony Queen, which is our like very racialized, reductive ways of describing people of color. And what you are seeing when you see those descriptions is you're seeing the stereotype of people. And I think that having media literacy and understanding that is really important part of this.
I have just one other question on the addiction piece, because I love everything that you said. So what I'm hearing is that people throw around like you're the dopamine rush. So it's not that people are necessarily getting, they're addicted to porn. So I'm my brain's trying to understand the difference between being addicted.
I was
to
comparing
like,
it to retail therapy because I do that, right? Yeah. Where I get,
it's a coping.
It's like a coping mechanism. But that's what I was thinking. I was like, oh my God, I totally do that. Am I addicted to shopping? No, but I like some retail therapy when I want to distract myself from the real fucking issues and the stresses of life.
Well, I feel like people can get addicted to just about anything, but maybe it depends on how you look at the word addicted or addiction. You become compulsive.
Dieting, healthy eating.
And reliant on it.
Language is an important factor here. And the reason language is really important is when we throw around a word like addiction, we impact the way that people are treated for it. And when you try to treat something like sex addiction or porn addiction with something like a 12-step program or abstinence or giving up the substance, that is a very much like laden in shame. And it doesn't treat the underlying stressor that is causing the problem in the first place. When we're talking about substance abuse, like alcohol and drugs, you're addicted to a substance. Your brain is chemically dependent on a substance, and you go through withdrawal when you do not have that substance. There is no evidence to suggest that if you don't watch porn, you don't do retail therapy, you stop eating the doing the binge eating, there is no withdrawal period. And that is a critical component of how we define addiction. And so language actually is important because this is how people end up in things like a 12-step program, like SLA. And that's the incorrect way to treat compulsive.
What is SLA?
Behaviors.
Is it
Sex love. And Love Addicts Anonymous?
Wow. Love's thrown in there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is, it's very based in shame. It's based in religion. One of the key components of it that is frankly disturbing is this idea that at every single meeting, you have to admit that you're powerless to your addiction, which negates culpability and being able to have autonomy. So you just are like, oh, I'm addicted to sex. I'm addicted to porn. I can't help myself. I can't do anything about it. And then where is the healing?
Time for a quick break so we can tell you about our carefully chosen sponsors.
Please stay tuned and buy their products because we only tell you about what we love and what we truly believe in, and it helps keep this podcast free to you.
Totally.
That's. I think that's a mind-blowing, recognizing those different pieces, those factors. Like everyone talks about porn in this negative light and sex as well. Masturbation, even. People talk about how they can get addicted to their vibrators. I get asked that and I know, Amy, that we've been together at times where people will raise their hand during a training, a product training, and ask if it's possible because they don't want to use a vibrator because they've heard it's possible to get addicted to the vibrator. And my answer is always, no, you don't get addicted to your vibrator. It might be, you might be normalizing it and needing it all the time because you're used to it relieving a sort of sexual, maybe you feel pressure outside of your sexual life, but then the vibrator gives you comfort, which is what happens for me. But I love that. It's like popping a Xanax could be, that gives you, right? That can
give changes your brain.
A different, exactly. It gives you a different,
popping
a different
Xanax and you can become chemically dependent on it. You can't become chemically addicted to your vibrator. I have a lot of questions from people who will people who come into my clinic who will say like, am I desensitized? Have I like ruined myself for sex? And like what it is actually is that you can become conditioned to a certain kind of stimulation. It's a lot like if you sit on your foot for a really long time and it falls asleep. It's like that can sometimes, it'll come back. The sensation will come back. And the way to deal with that is to have varied forms of stimulation, starting to use lube, having different kinds of vibrators in on the mix. If that is something that is such a concern to you. But I like to really push back on this conditioning that like, oh, I only come in this one way. What's wrong with me? I actually think that pleasure is pleasure and an orgasm is an orgasm. And if that's the way that you come, we need to stop shaming that so much and stop putting things on such a hierarchy.
Yeah,
absolutely. Agreed. You answered this next question a little bit. I just want the listeners to know, because the issue of porn, am I watching too much porn. So are there signs they should be aware of? And I know you touched on this a little bit, but just to dive a little deeper into that.
Yeah. So I have a lot of people who come into my clinic who are coming in for compulsive sexual behaviors. And the vast majority of people who come in are completely fine. The way that they describe their porn is they feel out of control. They feel like they can't stop. They feel like they can't do it. And what they describe is like they have, they go to their jobs, they have their friends, they have a normal life. Maybe they watch porn 10 minutes a day, but they feel addicted to it because of something that's called moral incongruence. They believe that porn is bad. They believe that what they're doing is out of control. And therefore, it makes them believe that they are a porn addict or a sex addict. The vast majority of people who believe that they have this addict label are actually completely okay. And it has a lot to do with shame. They may have also had like pretty neutral ideas about porn and about their porn habits, but perhaps a partner caught them watching porn. And porn wasn't something that was agreed upon in their relationship contract. And their partner has now shamed them and told them that they're a porn addict. And now they have to go get sex therapy because they have a porn problem. The problem isn't porn. The problem is shame. Mm-hmm. And the only time it becomes a compulsive sexual behavior issue is if it's interfering with your life in a substantial way. So a lot of the work that I do isn't about changing someone's porn habits or changing someone's masturbation habits. It's about finding congruence and authentic sexuality in a way that feels safe and contained for them and being able to align those messaging. Sure, there are people who will come into clinic and they are completely debilitated by the way that they're using pornography. It's pretty rare. Sure, it does happen. But that's a lot of work under feeling, understanding how to use self-soothing techniques, understanding anxiety, understanding the underlying issues that porn is momentarily soothing in order to gain more self-control over your nervous system so that you don't need to lean on a crutch. Mm-hmm. And that's rare, but it does happen. That doesn't make porn addictive. It's that porn is a self-soothing mechanism for life.
So I just want to reiterate and correct me if I'm wrong, Gigi. And what I'm hearing or what I'm believing from this is that you could watch porn 12 times a day and still be a friend, a person that's getting their work done, a person that is a member, a contributing member of their community, and you don't have an addiction to porn.
Yeah, there's no such thing as porn addiction.
Exactly. That's what I just want to reiterate to listeners out there, because people ask. And I think those boundaries or those rules about when you're addicted, it's just like the same when you're considered to have a sexless marriage, as if like you don't have sex more than 11 times, or if you have sex less than 11 times a year.
Who decided that?
Exactly.
Those useless stats.
Totally. So I just want to reiterate, because I think it's important for people to know, there have been times where I've watched porn 5 times a day and I haven't felt the shame around it, but I'm sure if I had told people, I would have saw 1 out of 5 might have shamed me, right? Mm-hmm. And then I'd be like, maybe I do have a problem. So I totally get it. And I guess I wanted to
or you Google it and
to affirm,
and
yeah,
the whole internet says you have a problem.
Fear. Well, yes. I mean, it's really like Googling it and talking about sort of the internet. It's like you'll see things from The Guardian, The HuffPo, to honestly places I've written that are like, oh, well, we all know that porn addiction is real, or porn addiction ruined my life. And it's propaganda.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what likely ruined that person's life was the shame and trauma they experienced before that, is my guess, and not the actual porn part. Not ruined your life, but then you found this other thing that was the Band-Aid or the crutch. And that's the thing that you point the fingers at, instead of here's this all this other stuff that really changed me and hurt me. And, you know, but good for you for finding a Band-Aid, because I mean, the three of us know that when we have trauma and shame, and especially when we're younger, we don't know how to comprehend it and work with it. Or even as you're older, a lot of people don't have the tools for that. You find what you can find. And I know that we can shame ourselves or be like, oh, I'm not a good enough person, I'm a bad person for relying on porn or drugs or alcohol or whatever. And you're doing the best that you can. And you sure there's better ways to treat yourself, maybe. And also, I think there's just like a compassion piece and not pointing to the thing that made you feel good. Like, let's look at the things that actually are the pain points instead.
And I mean, I think it's also important to look at the fact that places like Exodus Cry and Fight the New Drug, one is Christian and one is Mormon organization. And shocking news, fundamentalist religious background does not equal good for sex. And this whole idea of sex addiction actually came out of the 80s AIDS crisis. Mm-hmm. And it was very much based in shame. And this is stuff that's spoon fed to us. And you combine that with the, frankly, completely dog shit sex education that we get in America. And what do you expect? Mm-hmm. People see porn and they suddenly think that that's real life. It's like learning how to cook from watching Hell's
Guy
Kitchen.
Ferrari or whatever.
Yeah. He's whatever not a cook is. Though, is he? Yeah.
No.
I was trying to say Gordon Ramsay. I knew it as soon as it came out of my mouth, I was like, that's not
wrong one. One of the G's.
That guy has a lot of restaurants in Vegas. Yeah. The guy Ferrari.
I had a client who asked me, like, okay, I masturbate 5 times a day. Is that bad? And so the questions, and this brings me to my next question. Well, we already asked about like what people should be aware of, but I'm going to get to more like the tools. So my questions for him were like, okay, well, how is it affecting your life? Like, are you going to work and feeling like you can't, you know, hang out at your work desk? You need to go in the bathroom and go do this thing there, which is like still, in my opinion, considered a public space, even if you can close the door and lock it. Or are you, you know, driving your car? Are you not going to hang out with your family? Which is what April was saying earlier, like, is it getting in the way of these things? So let's use that person as an example. What if they're like, okay, my relationship with porn is feeling like it is getting in the way of those things. I am not going to the work meeting. I am doing this when I'm supposed to show up at the family dinner and I can't leave my house because I want to keep masturbating and watching porn or whatever. And so this could be sex addiction or not addiction, but like, you know, compulsion with sex, porn, or masturbation. And so if they wanted to work on it, what could they do?
Well, you'd want to see a qualified sex therapist who does not identify as a sex addiction therapist. If you see somebody use the word addiction, even if they're ASECT registered, even I'm in the UK, so COSRT registered, if they say the word addiction, you run in the opposite direction because they are, yeah, well, they're going to treat it in a way that's like abstaining and cutting it off and like basically making you feel like shit when you already feel like shit about the way you're behaving with it. So find a qualified sexual therapist who specializes in compulsive sexual behaviors and does not work from a 12-step model. Somebody who understands nervous system regulation, who has training specifically from, in the UK, I would say specifically, if you've been trained by Silva Nevez, you will, he's like the main sex, he wrote the book on compulsive sexual behaviors, mm-hmm. The king, the prince. That will be like a good way to go. But anyone who's like says compulsive sexual behaviors or out of control sexual behaviors, that's somebody who's probably in line with what you would want to work with. Don't be afraid to shop around with therapists. I like to think a lot of it, like, it's like dating on dating apps. It's like, talk to them, get that free consultation, find out if they're your vibe and then go with it. Cause you want somebody who isn't going to shame you. The way that it kind of works, like when you're in that space, is that the therapist is going to want to address both what it is that is the underlying stressors, the stuff that is perpetuating the cycle, perpetuating the behavior, and ways that we can reintegrate erotic material into your life for it to feel authentic and safe and healthy for you. If you're a person who is now negating friendships, negating work, isn't going to do everything because it's such a consuming part of their life. There's a lot of inner work that needs to be done around nervous system regulation and self-soothing techniques in order to recognize when you get to that point of emotional overload where you reach for the porn to immediately soothe. Because if you have alternative ways to soothe yourself, to calm yourself down, it's not that the urge to go for porn or go for food or whatever it is, it doesn't go away, but it turns the volume down. So you have a moment to actually think, is this something that I want to do? Mm-hmm. What is it that I'm trying to soothe rather than actually doing the inner work? And then while you're working with a therapist, you'll process a lot of these emotions, figure out the messaging that is authentic to you, that you heard about porn, that you heard about sex, that you heard about addiction. Find out what it is that was fed to you. What if this is coming from shame, society, religion? And what if this is authentic to your own sexuality? And I think a really key component to this, lastly, is that there's this idea that you have to just give up porn. Mm. That if you're, I'm doing air quotes again, but like addicted to porn, you just stop. You go cold turkey and you can never use it again. That's a real surefire way to feel like shit about yourself when you watch porn again. Mm-hmm. It's not particularly realistic. It's also not fair to you. But what are ways that we can introduce erotic material into your life in a way that feels authentic and healthy? Mm-hmm. And your therapist will be there supporting you the entire way. And then you can really reestablish your relationship with erotic materials in a way that does feel authentic and healthy to you, that allows you to also maintain other areas of your life.
So one of the questions we were going to ask is, if I once had an issue with porn, does it mean I can never watch it again? What you're saying is not the case. And I think of, you know, addiction stuff where the rate, you know, everything's thrown into the same bubble of how we calculate this, the stats, and, you know, the relapse rate is like something like 80 something percent. And I don't know if that's just, they're talking about substances and alcohol. I think it's just addiction in general. And I wonder what it'd be like if you didn't look at like, okay, I'm taking a break from watching porn and I watch porn again. Oh no, I relapse. Like how that would change the stats and this idea that like,
even, you know, the word relapse, I would very much advise against.
Totally. Time for a quick break to talk about one of our sponsors who just so happens to be our absolute favorite lube, Uberlube. Uberlube is a luxurious silicone lubricant and it enhances intimacy. It's there when you want it and it blends in when you're done with it. So you have control over that lube. It's long lasting and leaves the skin extra velvety. And honestly, y'all, I want it all over my body. Thousands of doctors in the US are recommending Uberlube to their patients. It's body friendly, less likely to change the pH, and it has vitamin E, so it feels extra moisturizing.
There's a reason why we've been a fan of Uberlube for years. There's no flavor or scent. It's even great for oral sex, everyone. But it's not just great for sex. You can use it for massage, your hair, you can prevent chafing. It even brings out the colors of your beautiful tattoos. And the bottle is absolutely gorgeous. It looks more like a cosmetic, so you can leave it anywhere shamelessly for easy access. Just go to uberlube.com and use the discount code shameless10 to get 10% off and free shipping. Again, that's uberlube.com right now with code shameless10 for 10% off and free shipping. This podcast is also brought to you by OMGS.com. Join over 1 million people who are experiencing more pleasure with OMGS. They take scientific research of thousands of vulva owners showing techniques to pleasure that pussy. They turn this research into tasteful, educational short videos, animated modules, and infographics. OMGS is for anyone who wants to learn about vulva pleasure or take it to the next level. Want to take your orgasms from good to out of this world? Then check out OMGS. Or if you're a vulva lover and want to up your pussy pleasuring skills, then you need to check out OMGS.
I've personally been recommending OMGS to my clients for years, and it's completely changed their lives. They have three seasons: external pleasure, internal pleasure, and sex toys. It's not a subscription service, and you don't need to download a thing. OMGS also makes a fabulous gift, and your purchase supports more pleasure research. So just go to omgs.com/shameless to get 10% off right now. Again, that's omgs.com/shameless to receive 10% off, unlimited access towards enhancing your pleasure power. The link is in the episode's description. What you're saying is it's not a relapse. It's finding I don't really love the word healthy necessarily, but like a balanced or beneficial way, a way that that helps you, supports your life, and isn't just like, oh, if I do this again, I'm the worst person ever. Maybe people need to do that with substances and alcohol because it's affecting your body in a different way than, you know, just viewing something. Like you were saying, it's changing your internal chemistry and the way that you work with it. So I'm assuming that's what you're saying.
It's actually interesting that you bring that up, because that kind of wraps back around to what I was saying earlier about the religiosity of 12-step programs. Mm-hmm. I know that 12-step programs for people who have substance abuse issues can be very great, and that people really, I think the main thing that people find in those 12-step programs is community. But I don't necessarily think that that's the answer, even if it is substance abuse. Like if you're an alcoholic or you're addicted to drugs and you want to go to a 12-step program, more power to you. I'm not going to stop you. And I'm not going to stop you from going to SLA if you want to. I don't advise it, but you do you. But it's very much based in religion. There's a very shame-based, you're being held accountable, right? So like if you act like a human and you say like you're addicted to cocaine and you make a mistake where you do cocaine again. So I was going to say heroin, but same thing, different day. Mm-hmm. It's like you're being held accountable in a way that can be quite shaming. And I don't know if that's necessarily helpful. So, you know, like we were saying before, it's like reevaluating your relationship with what substance you're addicted to in a chemical sense with drugs or alcohol, and finding community doesn't necessarily have to involve 12-step programs.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'll just add one other personal thing that I've actually never shared on the podcast before. April probably knows what it is, but I won't share too many details about it because it's so very personal to me. And I know it's shameless sex, but it's not about sex. But I'm someone that has had addiction issues with substances, specific ones in my lifetime. And so did some 12-step ones, but did not. The religion thing was like, I don't want anything to do with that. So I found, you know, all women's groups that one specifically that is utilizing psychedelics as part of healing, which is part of something I've been doing for a long time as part of healing
for you.
It's awesome. Yeah, it was amazing. And so it wasn't being a part of the group that made it so that I wanted to stop doing the thing. It was actually for me personally, it was just to say, and this is different from what we're talking about, the porn, sex, and these kind of compulsions, right? Because for me, my body was hooked on a thing. Mm-hmm. I could feel it in my cells, like hooked on a thing.
That's chemical dependence.
That's chemical dependency. And my brain was too. The story of my brain that
is literally dependent on it.
Yeah. And it's like, you won't be able to really manage without this thing because you'll struggle and you'll feel very alone and dark, whatever. And the thing that really helped me, and this is very different from what we're talking about again, I had to actually close the door entirely to say, I'll never do this thing again. Mm-hmm. It's just not in this lifetime. I can never do this thing again because I've abused it so heavily and become so dependent on it. Mm-hmm. And with the 12 steps world, that was like this branch that like they don't bring in any of the God stuff. And if you're into the God stuff, good for you. And if it works for you, good for you. It just wasn't what I wanted. And I didn't want to go into a place that created shame around something I already felt shame about. And I feel like I got a really great experience there where I could come out and be like, hey, I did use the word relapse. I started using this again and no one shamed me. No one's like, oh my God. They're like, yeah, we've done that too. We're with
community
you.
Community without shame. Who knew?
Yeah. Yeah, who knew?
And something that you really highlighted there that I just want to highlight quickly mm-hmm. is like when it comes to substance abuse, abstinence is the way usually forward for people. Mm-hmm. Because when you have an unhealthy relationship with a substance, it's an addictive chemical substance, alcohol, heroin, cocaine, whatever it is, you really do need to not use it anymore because your brain will immediately go back to that place. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons that porn and sex addiction need to not be called addictions.
Yeah,
because that's not how it works. You can mm-hmm. have porn and sex in your life in a healthy way, in a way that feels authentic to you. You can't be a cocaine addict necessarily and then be like, oh, I'm just going to like use cocaine sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't
work that way.
And the last example I can make it really quick was just in my early 20s. I did think I had an issue with porn. So when I was living in San Francisco, I was alone watching a lot of porn and I thought I had a problem with it. And then I just like decided for whatever life happened, I stopped watching it. Now I can watch it very easily. It's not a problem. I like watch it once and I'm not like, oh, now I need to watch it for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. It feels very different for me. So I like that. Like for me, I have those two experiences. One, knowing when it is a chemical dependency and something that feels like an addiction. And one that was just like, I am being compulsive, but it doesn't mean
that's
that
mindfulness,
I can never do this.
Though. You're being mindful. I think there's a lot of mindfulness practices that you can take in, which I've done for things that aren't chemical, the dopamine release, don't bring it to that, yeah. But I did. But for me, like the non substance abuse stuff, the things that I like, mm-hmm. the retail therapy, the wine, I don't ever think that I'm addicted to alcohol, but I will just reach for a glass of wine at the end of my day because it's my stress reliever, right? And I'm like, wait, the mindfulness though, or it's masturbation. Mm-hmm. Yes. So I don't know. We haven't talked about tools for this, but I do want to bring something. The question, I know we have to, I don't want to go. This is such a good conversation.
I'm having the best time.
I am too. So of course we've taken away the pieces of shame, I think during this interview about watching porn. However, I want to ask you a question because I think it does matter. So does the type of porn that you're consuming matter? Because I believe it does.
That's a very interesting question. I'm actually very glad you asked it. So there are a lot of messages that we get that porn infuses misogyny. And actually, the evidence of what people are actually watching and how people feel about women doesn't support that. In fact, there's been evidence that shows that people who watch pornography actually have better views of women than people who don't. With that being said, there are ways that we should be consuming porn in a way that is responsible as people who are consumers. And I want to qualify that by saying that this isn't just porn. This is all of our media. Where is it coming from? What is the messaging? What am I seeing? Is this a place I can trust? So there are a couple of ways that you can watch pornography that are really great. You want to be sure that you're watching ethical pornography. That's kind of the way that we like slap organic on like a banana nowadays, but there are ways that you can tell that something is ethical. First of all, most small porn companies will have a thing on their website that explains exactly how they are ethical. So go and read that. But some key things to look for are the performers and the staff being paid in a way that they think is equitable for the work that they are doing. Mm-hmm. Are these sex workers themselves, go to their Twitter pages and their OnlyFans, are they talking about the company? Are they talking about the scenes that they did? It's very important that within an ethical porn structure that the performers are performing acts that not only did they agree to beforehand, that on the day they felt comfortable doing. This is all part of this structure. Mm-hmm. And this isn't just about performers. Actually, the people who are editing, the people who are filming, how are they feeling? Are they a part of it? When in doubt, if you find a performer that you like and you want to be ethical, go to their OnlyFans, go to their pages, go to their content, pay for it directly, pay for your porn, because there are ways that we go to the store, we buy organic spinach and avocados and whatever. We want to put that stuff in our body, consume organic porn, because ethical porn, I should say, because from these mainstream porn sites, some of this porn was made in a way that is, it's not necessarily like bad. Like mainstream porn isn't necessarily bad, but it is made from a white, cis, hetero point of view. So when people watch porn who aren't a white, cis, hetero man, and they're like, this isn't really for me. I don't understand why I don't like this. It's because it wasn't made for you.
Mm-hmm. Also, and there are like weird porn, like where it's bad.
Oh, like, we'll find that stuff too. But mm-hmm. it's like, pay for your shit. Mm-hmm. Like we pay for our Netflix, our Hulu, our Disney Plus. Pay for your porn. You're supporting these small creators, these small sex workers. I should say small business sex workers, not that they're small. Mm-hmm. And that's a really important part of this. It's like understanding where you are getting your content. Sure, it's super easy to just like type in RedTube or whatever it is, but like that's how you know that what you're consuming is actually made by somebody who wanted to be there, who made something they wanted and promotes that content.
Mm-hmm. And that's important to highlight because we're not advocating. I'm not. And I can guarantee that I'm speaking for all of us here on this interview that we're not advocating for child pornography or porn that isn't consented to film. Mm-hmm. Exactly. This mm-hmm. is all.
If something is not consented to, if something is with minors, that's not pornography. That's mm-hmm. child sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. And that is unethical created content.
But I think it's important to highlight because people will muddle those 2/3 different ways to describe what you're watching because it is mm-hmm. called child pornography when people talk about it. But you're absolutely right. And mm-hmm. I love that. We have to understand that porn can be ethically consumed. And I love that advice, those mm-hmm. pieces of advice, because that was quite a bit all in one answer to a question mm-hmm. that I'm stoked that you brought that to everyone's attention because it's important.
I have just one last question that is not exactly a tangent because that's to go with what we were saying like a half an hour ago. But I remember these like articles that I saw and wanted to see what your opinion is before we wrap this up. There has been things that have suggested that porn has affected erectile function and ejaculatory control issues. What are your thoughts on this?
So the amount of times that I've seen this propagated in the media is, to put it lightly, worrying. There is absolutely no evidence to suggest that pornography consumption is connected to ED. The studies that have been put out are very much, if you look at the people who funded them, they're all linked to these anti-porn. They're linked to these anti-porn, specifically Your Brain on Porn organizations. The sample sizes are laughable. Mm-hmm. They are not peer reviewed, and porn is neutral. It is not it is not something that causes ED. And the fact that this keeps getting propagated by not just mainstream media, but like well-known sex educators is worrying.
I wonder if this is the same category as that article that came out from Vice magazine that was based on a study of like 7 people that female ejaculation isn't real. Like all this, probably the same things that are like,
but like that porn will, if you watch porn or masturbate, it'll lower testosterone. And there were like 10 people in the study and none of the outside factors were actually factored in any way. Yeah. That's
my God. My partner said the other day, he's like, how many more ejaculations do you think I have left in my life? I was like, what?
A million, what? A zillion.
Like, that's
quantifiable.
I was like, you don't have to worry about
that's
that.
That's so cute.
That's your partner. Imagine the average person.
That's what I'm saying. And he's 55 years old. And I was like, babe, you're fine. Like,
keep on coming.
You don't have to.
You are good.
I was like, where are you getting this information? So,
yeah, and that's a co-host of the Shameless Sex Podcast. Yeah. God, we're in bad straits.
I mean, I definitely debunked that myth to him, but he was like, really? Yeah. I mean, I did love it. I was like, that is kind of cute. It was adorable to me because I was like, oh, babe, I mean, don't worry. It's not like a period. You don't just have a number of eggs that you're going to drop. Okay. That's what I think he maybe was comparing it to, but I was like, no, it's like, very much.
Do I go into menopause?
Yeah. Like, you're not
menopause. Oh man.
But people still have orgasms in menopause. Yo.
And he that's your next merch thing. Yes. Got a t-shirt.
Menopause and menstruation.
Like Ken enough.
Ken enough.
Right. Oh, anyway, stop bringing to Barbie. All right.
Well, this was so great. I love talking to you, Gigi. And thank you, because this was not only insightful, but so helpful, because we have this shame around both of these questions about porn addiction and sex addiction, right? Are these something that people need to worry about? And I think you really did break it down in a way that is understandable. And I'm glad that we got rid of some of this bullshit that is just festering underneath people's pleasure, really. Mm-hmm. It really does come down to blocking people's ultimate pleasure. So that being said, I want to talk about your current offerings, and also how can folks find you and work with you and get more of a Gigi Engel?
Sure. So you can find me on Instagram, X, Twitter. I don't know what his deal is. All at
whatever yes, the fuck like, it is.
Is what it is. Misogyny. You can find on all platforms of the misogynist at Gigi Engel. You can also find me at MissGigiEngel.com. And if you would like to work with me, you can go to The Therapy Yard, where I am currently working as an associate.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, beautiful.
And your podcast too. Remind everyone about your podcast.
Oh, yes. And I'm also the co-host of the Bad Break Podcast, where we break down the most jaw-dropping, crazy breakups you've ever heard from a psychosexual and investigative journalist perspective.
Love it.
Okay. Well, I'm tuning into that one ASAP. So, wow. Thank you so much, Gigi. I know you're in the UK and it's getting late over there, but we would love to talk to you again. And gratitude for all you're doing for the world. Thank you for bringing people more pleasure. We really do value you and everything you brought to us today. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Oh, love it. And to all of our Shameless Sex listeners out there, thank you for joining us every Tuesday and sometimes Fridays. And also, if you haven't bought our book, go to shamelesssex.com. You can check out Shameless Sex. It's almost like a choose your own adventure, but it's a choose your own pleasure path.
Gigi has it
right now. If you're not watching us on YouTube, check that out. And really, really, it will be a book that you can come back to again and again and again and again. So it's not just a one and done.
And when you're like 55 and over, you can keep humming again and again. It doesn't end. Yeah. So there you go.
You're not running out of orgasms there.
Nope.
Okay.
Just
well,
for days.
We do love each and every one of our listeners. Go ahead, give us a review. If you bought the book, review us on anywhere that you purchased it, because that helps more people find Shameless Sex, and also folks like Gigi Engel, who bring the world so much amazing and incredible information. Mm-hmm. I've been told by the UK that Americans use the word amazing too much.
So amazing.
Damn it. Incredible. Beautiful. I'm thinking of other adjectives, which I'll come up with.
So, gorgeous.
Yes. Beautiful. Okay. Right. Well, that also describes
gorgeous.
Our
listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gorgeous. That's a good one. Yeah. Gorgeous.
So we love you all. We'll see you next Tuesday. Ciao for now.
Want to learn more? Go to shamelesssex.com. And for 15% off of some of our favorite sex toys, use coupon code SHAMELESSSEX at purepleasureshop.com.